This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And impeachment proceedings continue in the U.S. House of Representatives. We'll talk about the parallels between what's going on now and the 1929 impeachment with Huey Long, the Louisiana governor, getting impeached by the Louisiana House 90 years ago. Tom Aswell of Louisiana Voice is slated to be with us later. We start with activist Daryl Glasper, who's been with us many times, a former Metro councilman in Baton Rouge, and Dr. Carl Lucard, one of the world's best cardiologists, of course, has been doing his thing in the medical field for many, many years with great success. And Carl is joining us by phone. Daryl is in studio. And these two are unlikely friends, and it all happened 50 years ago this month. December 2nd, 1969 was the actual date. The first black school and the first white school met on the basketball court in a moment of integration that has historical significance. This seems like no big deal today, but in 1969 it was a very big deal at the Catholic High Gym. And Dr. Lucard, you were, I think, a 15-year-old sophomore at the time. Do you recall that game as vividly now as it was then?
I certainly do, and we had several more matchups the following year that are also very memorable to me. So, yes.
And there was concern that there might be some trouble, correct?
Yes, the way this came about is that both McKinley and Catholic High had pregame meals at Piccadilly on Government Street. Our coach, Jimmy Cangelosi, knew their coach, Carl Stewart, and they were sitting together, and they just decided, why don't we play a game? They took it back to their respective principals, and both of the principals had enough courage to say, yeah, we ought to play. And so the first game took place with locked doors, family members only, and behind the scenes, a lot of threats about bodily harm apparently were occurring unbeknownst to us.
So a lot of police officers were there, I hear.
That's correct.
And some very good basketball players.
Well, at least from McKinley, I would say so. We had a few from Catholic High. Certainly, I don't include myself too much in that regard.
Well, you had Ed LeBlanc, who played at LSU.
That's right. We had eventually went on to play at LSU. We had a fellow by the name of Sammy Perina who could jump out the gym, and Don Zito, and we had some players.
Well, the date was December 2nd, 1969. Southern was coached by the legendary Carl Emerson Stewart, who later became head coach at Southern University. And I think you played for him in two places, Daryl Glasper.
Yes, I played for him at McKinley and also at Southern University. But, hey, Doc, I want to say this. You know, when you look back 50 years, I can tell you that Carl Stewart literally blew us out about you all shooting 15 out of 18 free throws, 82.5%. I mean, he put that in red, and it's in his book to this day. That's 50 years later. We shot a whopping 54%, 14 out of 26. And I can tell you, after that game that night, we were shooting free throws before practice on every practice. But you know, look, a lot of good have come out of two schools meeting. One being totally African-American and the other one being totally predominantly white. Because
all white at the time.
Look, in those days, we would travel, Doc, and I think we talked about this, to Alexandria, to Lake Charles, to New Orleans a lot to play Carver, to Landry, Coin High, because we couldn't play here in town. And with all of the schools in town, there was a number of them. And those bus rides are, I can remember them very vividly. On the way back after those games was two sandwiches and a carton of milk. That's what we always talk about.
Well, Dr. Lucard, I know there was opposition to this game being played, and one of the reasons was the fear that McKinley might win, and they did win. So was that a disappointment for you?
Anytime you play a competitive basketball game against a quality opponent, whether you and you lose, it's always a disappointment. But, you know, Jim, the issue was that once the game started, it was kids playing kids. I don't recall, maybe Daryl does, but there was not a whole lot of trash talking in any of the three games that I played in. You know, we got fouled, they got fouled. You know, it was just kids playing basketball. And for me, the beauty of this game, and as I remember it, we just were having fun. We were kids having fun playing basketball. And I think that's what sports does. It brings people together that ordinarily wouldn't be brought together. And when it works, it's really a very beautiful thing.
Well, I'm looking over the box score for the game, and Daryl has the actual book. And the players on the Catholic team, Ben Weimer, Don Zito, mm-hmm. Sam D'Agostino, Terry Burt, Jerry Jolly, Glenn Silva, mm-hmm. Sam Perino, Dan Nola. Any relation to Aaron and Austin?
Yes, he's a first cousin.
Okay, Johnny Dawson, Jim McCarty, Steve Cora, Carl Lucart. Those were the members of the Catholic High team coached by Jimmy Cangelosi, December 2nd, 1969. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was any influence on the Jesuit St. Augustine b-ball game in 1965. That was played at the Jesuit gym under similar, you know, covert circumstances.
You're talking about in New Orleans, right?
Right.
Right.
Dan, that game was actually played on a Saturday morning. Very unusual to be for a basketball game to be played. And it, too, was played under very similar circumstances. Locked gym, family members only, no public allowed, and lots of security. I know about that because I know some people who played in that game. There's a famous basketball player from Jesuit, one of the great athletes at Jesuit, Fabian Mang, and yeah. His younger brother Herb Mang lives here in Baton Rouge, and so there's still some stories that kind of whispers now, but. Whether or not that had any influence on our game 5 years later, I can't tell you that.
Why did it take so long?
I just think.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Carl.
Well, fact of the matter is that I lived as the crow flies, maybe 3/4 of a mile from where McKinley is. But we just didn't communicate. We didn't cross boundaries. We didn't talk. I mean, we were, you know, quite frankly, we were scared. We were scared of meeting Daryl Glasper, and I'm sure there was a little bit on his side. But that was the moment. That was the day. That was just how things were back in 1969. I'm not proud of it. I'm sure Daryl's not proud of it, but it's the way it was.
The McKinley players, a listener asked me to mention those as well, and for good reason. Leon Paul, Daryl Glasper, Jesse Simon, Lionel Taylor, Andre Turner, Mike Hegard, Jerry Jingles, who was leading scorer in that game, 23 points, Spawny Jenkins, Anthony James, Keith O'Connor, Raymond McLaughlin, Eugene
Menser,
Herbert Williams, and Charles Russell. Those were the players for McKinley High School. Final, by the way, 81-66. Catholic, I think, did lead at halftime, though, which was interesting. But it was a groundbreaking game in Louisiana and in Baton Rouge, and now this is something that, thank God, is no big deal when a majority black school faces a majority white school. But this was all white and all black, In 1969, by the way, at that same week, December 5th of 69 to be exact, December 6th actually, Arkansas and Texas played for what amounted to the national championship in college football in Fayetteville that same week. Texas won 15-14, and both schools were all white. So the fabric of college and prep athletics has changed, and for the better, with African Americans now included. And Carl Emerson Stewart went on to Southern University, and he coached one Daryl Glasper. And, of course, Carl Lukart continued to play. In fact, the next year he was the top scorer for Catholic High in a very close game against McKinley. We'll talk about that and let Dr. Lukart get back to his patients. We'll also hear more pearls of wisdom from Daryl Glasper. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. And we'll be back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle and Kirby Ferry is producing, and a few more minutes with Dr. Carl Lukart, who is a noted cardiologist known far and wide for his remarkable work here in Baton Rouge, and he is still doing his thing many years later. But 50 years ago, he was a 15-year-old sophomore playing in the first game of any sport between an all-white school and an all-black school, Catholic of Baton Rouge, and its gym under Jimmy Cangelosi, facing Carl Stewart's McKinley team. And McKinley won that one, 81-66, a heavy police presence, and there were no incidents of any sort. And you've told some stories, Dr. Lukart, that I did not appreciate or did not know that it all began at the Westmoreland Piccadilly, which I used to go to, and unfortunately it closed on June 29th, 2014, a sad day for many of us in this community. But that's where it began between Jimmy Cangelosi and Carl Stewart, and if not for that meeting at Piccadilly, this game might never have happened. So, Daryl Glasper, what was the significance of Dr. Lukart gave his perspective. What was the significance of this?
Well, you had a number of young men that, like Doc said, it was playing against each other and really having fun. That's what we did as young people, because there were not a lot of distractions that was going on around us then that's going around young people today. We didn't have cell phones and didn't have, you know, all of the ESPN and being able to watch sports. That's what we did. We played sports. But let me tell you what I appreciate about that game and about Catholic High. It was a good group of guys, well-disciplined, and, you know, 50 years later, I can tell you, after that game that night, I got tired of seeing number 22 because, man, they were going off screens, cutting screens, I mean, getting fouled, making free throws, and that was no trash talking. They were just doing the things that they did. And we really, really was kind of confused in that first half, you know, after regrouping. In the second half, we were able to score 45 points to beat them, 80-75, but a lot of people didn't understand, and they asked a lot of questions when we went back to school that day. They said how good of athletes they were. I said, man, look at the score. You know, we were dropping 100 points on some of the schools that we were playing, like Rosenwald and Carver. I mean, that was some battles. But that was a very significant game, and who knows, 50 years later that I have my life now in the hands of a cardiologist. My cardiologist, Dr. Lukart.
Well, it's a remarkable life that both of you have led, and you've known each other now for 50 years and have remained good friends throughout this time. And once again, if not for that meeting at Piccadilly, it would have probably been several more years before this kind of a game occurred.
You're probably right. Let me I want to say this. It was all of the athletes that preceded us, all of the All-Americans, all of the guys that put in a lot of hard work so that we can go out and want it to be like them at McKinley. And the same thing with Catholic High. Catholic High have been putting out a number of great athletes, not only at Catholic High, but look, man, we played against Joe Dean Jr., against Jay Darden, Ed LeBlanc, oh, God, a guy named John Inquest. When we played the following year, was you know, full-blown integration.
You played Baton Rouge High as well.
We played Baton Rouge High the following year. Because that one game facilitated us opening it up where we didn't have to travel around the state to find a school. It was 11 schools, 22 games. And look, I want to say this. you know, a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on winning and losing. You know, who was the winners? The winners was all, 22 to 30 players that played in that particular game, because what it did, it prepared us to go on to be able to communicate with individuals in different communities, to be able to work with them, to play with them, to go to school with them, and it opened up a lot of opportunities.
Bill Huey writes, for the record, I was at Catholic High from 1961 through 65. The school welcomed its first two black students in 1964. They didn't stay. And times were tough when you were a pioneer. We saw that at Little Rock Central High in 1957 with those Little Rock Nine. And in the South, there was great opposition to integration. And I know that even in the Sugar Bowl in 1966, when LSU faced Syracuse January 1st, 1966, there were people who didn't want LSU to play that game because Syracuse had Jim Nance and Floyd Little. You remember that, Darryl Glassman?
Yeah, I heard about it. I didn't know it, but I heard about it.
Yeah,
Jim, I want to say this. You know, I would go down to LSU and watch Pistol Pete Maravich. It was five players that I know I saw. It was Fig Newton, Apple Sanders, Luxio, Pistol Pete, and I don't know who the other gentleman was. But I used to go sit up in the rafters because we practiced at 6. And I used to go watch LSU play on a daily basis to watch Pistol Pete. And never got an opportunity to see any one of the high school games. And, you know, Carl always asked me, he said, well, you know, because we didn't have cell phones then. And I would come, he would see me coming from that direction. And on the way to practice, where you coming from every day? I said, I go down and watch LSU play. could you imagine that the athletes have come out of this community? And I want to say this.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing. But we never crossed paths like Doc said. We kind of stayed on our side of the community. They stayed on their side. But I tell you what, in 1971. I saw a young Carl Lewkart. I was a senior. And I say this, and it's all documented. I saw a young Carl Lewkart grow up to be a full-grown man. He had 23 points in probably one of the lopsided victories that we had won against him. Doc never stopped. And that's why he probably is the man that he is today. A lot of his teammates
now,
have
one
a
of your
respect for him.
Teammates, Darryl, Willie Titus has been treated by Dr. Lewkart, hasn't he?
Willie Titus has been treated by Dr. Lewkart. I've been treated by Dr. Lewkart.
He's your cardiologist?
He put me on.
You have to have a cardiologist?
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, look, when you get to be our age, you better. But, you know, look, I want to say this. A lot of good men, a lot of good men. And I can say this. Doc can tell you, we can remember. We were so glad to get the game over with so that we can go on with our lives. There was a lot of tension, especially in our locker room, losing by 2 points. And I'm being honest with you, because Carl Stewart said, hell, he said, look, we lose this damn game. In his huge expression, when he said, we lose this damn game, he said, I don't know if we're going to be able to play
all
basketball.
Right. A listener says you beat the devil out of Baton Rouge High, too. Is that correct?
Yeah, the teams that challenged the running game, we were able to win and score a lot of points.
But you were the best team. Our friend Gustavo says, love the show about the basketball game. Very interesting. Thought it was a great event. Pains me that it had to be such a big deal given that they were kids playing kids regardless of race. You mentioned Carl Stewart. Now, the word is first time he saw Pete Maravich, he said, oh, my God, he's one of us.
Yes. Look, Carl was a student of the game. Now, you got to remember, during those times, Carl Stewart had a guy named Leslie Scott. He was what we call the chosen one. I mean, Leslie did some things with a basketball that many back in 64 and 65, nobody that had seen before. But let me say this. When Pistol Pete Maravich, and I can say this, he is probably one of the greatest athletes I've ever laid my eyes on. I saw Pistol Pete in the old barn at two sides. I saw that man hit 100 free throws without missing one. That's a fact. I mean, I'm sitting there.
Right. You ran track, too, didn't you?
Ran track.
A listener, Tracy, says you once ran against the great Al Coffey from LSU.
Oh, no. That was Wickley Robinson.
Yeah?
That was Wickley Robinson and Al Coffey. Al Coffey was, at that time, the fastest white boy I'd ever seen in my life. And I mean, you know, I was in the ninth grade. Mm-hmm. He ran against Wickley Robinson. It was Wickley Robinson and him at LSU.
Al won.
And to this day, Wick was a super mm-hmm. athlete. But those were fun days, man. Because you know, when you have athletes, regardless if you're white or black, the African American community always wanted to be a competitor and excellent. But we always respected the guys who had the talent to beat us at whatever game they were going to beat us at.
Well, Al Coffey ran a 9.400, as did Billy Cannon. And last time I checked, they're still listed at the LSU track office. That's the record. They do 100 meters now rather than 100-yard dash. But Al and Billy could motor. Thank you, Darrell Glasper.
Thank you so much.
We'll return with more Talk Louisiana after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. We switch gears just a bit, and in a moment we're going to be joined by Tom Aswell, the publisher of Louisiana Voice. He follows Louisiana politics and, of course, has a great perspective. Tom's been a journalist now for about as long as it's been since Baton Rouge Catholic and Baton Rouge McKinley played the historic first game, basketball game, between a white school and a black school, December 2nd, 1969. In 1929, 90 years ago, it was April, the Louisiana House of Representatives voted to impeach Governor Huey Long on charges ranging from misuse of state funds to bribery and blasphemy. The Kingfish avoided conviction in the Senate, went on to swing back hard against his political opponents. Huey Long quoted in Politico, an old quote, obviously, this from a story several years ago, saying, "I used to get things done by saying please. Now I dynamite them out of my path." Long had called a special legislative session to enact an occupational license tax of 5 cents a barrel on refined oil to finance his welfare programs. The state's oil interest enlisted Cecil Morgan, a 30-year-old freshman representative from Shreveport, who later became general counsel of Standard Oil, to spearhead the impeachment proceedings. Long faced 19 allegations in 1929 when he was impeached. They included bribing lawmakers to get bills passed, also carrying a concealed weapon, demolishing the previous governor's mansion without legislative authorization, and attending a drunken party where a stripper was present. He also was accused of trying to arrange the murder of State Representative Jared Sanders Jr., the son of a former governor who had grappled with Long in the lobby of the Roosevelt Hotel in New Orleans. The impeachment effort touched off fistfights on the State House floor in 1929. Several lawmakers used brass knuckles in a bloody brawl. The House finally voted to impeach Long on 8 of 19 counts. When the issue moved to the Senate, Long produced a document signed by 15 senators. 24 senators, of course, were against him, but he had 15, which was one more than he needed to block action on impeachment. Same two-thirds requirement in the Louisiana Senate in 1929 as there is in the National Senate, the U.S. Senate, with John Neely Kennedy and William Morgan Cassidy in 2019. 15 senators stated they would vote against impeachment because the trial was, quote, illegal. With the needed two-thirds majority required to convict out of reach, Long's opponents halted the proceedings. He finished his gubernatorial term, served 3 years in the U.S. Senate, and on September 8, 1935, was shot, died 2 days later, September 10, 1935, at the old Our Lady of the Lake Hospital. That was Huey Long's political odyssey at the age of 42. He was gone, only on the stage for 7 years, but those 7 years have left an imprint on Louisiana life like no other person in the history of our state. And Tom Aswell, who's a student of history of Louisiana Voice, there are those who say the Kingfish and the Donald have more than a few things in common. How would you answer them?
Well, they were both what you call populist, I guess. And you're talking about the round robin document that Earl got the 15 senators. I mean, Huey got the 15 senators to sign. And I don't think Trump is going to need that. I think he's safe from any impeachment, any successful impeachment.
There's no doubt. Mitch McConnell said today that basically he's on the defense team.
Yep.
And he's a juror, but he's defending the president. And he will vote, as probably all the other senators will, for Donald Trump to stay in office and not be impeached, not be convicted on. He'll already be impeached. He will be impeached, but
correct,
not be convicted on the articles of impeachment.
Correct.
And if any Democrat in the Senate goes the other way, the Republicans and President Trump, I'm sure, will say, look there, look there.
Total exoneration.
Total exoneration. But is there any Democrat who will go the other way?
Well, there's some leaning that way now, from what I've read. There are a couple of them on the fence. And Nancy Pelosi, much to her, to her credit, said she's not going to try to sway any of them that are on the fence. She's not going to try to lean on any of them. And I think that's wise.
Well, it appears in the House, though, that the Democrats have a solid majority. They can they can absorb more than a few defections.
Correct.
And they had two the first go-around, and probably quite likely will have at least two this go-around. But no Republican appears ready to go against Trump.
Haven't heard of any.
And that indicates how popular he is in the Republican ranks. How do you explain that, Tom Aswell?
I don't know that he is so popular as he as the Republicans are simply afraid to go against him. Because if he survives it, he will make life miserable for any Republican senator that votes against him. Absolutely miserable. And so will their constituents.
A listener, Holly in the Garden District, says, who's the most likely Republican in the Senate to vote against him? And I'd have to think it would be somebody like Romney, but Romney's from Utah.
Susan Collins might, Maine. But I don't hold out a lot of hope that she will, but she could.
Yeah, but it's quite likely that all the Republicans will vote to preserve the presidency of Donald Trump.
And, I think you're right.
Another listener, this from Karen's in Mid-City, saying, is there any chance Louisiana senators will vote against the president? The
absolutely
answer is
not.
No, absolutely not.
No.
John Kennedy and William Morgan Cassidy, they get up every morning and they wait for their marching orders from the Donald.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially John Kennedy.
877-217-5757 is your number. And if you'd like to reach us by email, talk@talklouisiana.org. I mentioned that Piccadilly where the first game between a black school and a white school was hatched at Westmoreland. That's now the Key Academy, run by Dr. Laura Cassidy, the wife of Bill Cassidy, who lives on Dalrymple Drive in a very nice home and has a great life. And he's the senior senator in Louisiana. But Tom, he certainly is outflanked when it comes to attention by the junior senator. How do you explain that?
Well, the mouth of the South is not going to take a backseat to anyone.
That's the new name for John Neely Kennedy, the mouth of the South?
Yeah, you
heard it here first.
I've written more than once that the most dangerous place to be in Washington is between John Kennedy and a camera.
Yes, a few people have said that on this show.
Yeah.
And,
it's not original. It's been said before by other people as well, but it certainly applies to John Kennedy.
Well, and my guess is that he will run for president of the United States in the year of 2024 as a Republican. And you know what? If he gets one delegate, and I think he'll get lots of delegates, he'll get one more than Bobby Jindal received.
That won't be too hard to do.
And by the way, Tom Baswell, our guest of Louisiana Voice, wrote the definitive biography of Bobby Jindal. The best book ever written about Bobby Jindal, and it is a good book, very comprehensive, well-researched.
It's the only one written about him.
Well, the only one other than books written by him, and, mm-hmm. and his, of course, were not.
They were ghostwritten.
Let's put it this way.
Ghostwritten.
He was no John Kennedy. There was no Pulitzer in the offing for Bobby Jindal. But Aswell wrote a spectacular biography about Bobby Jindal, and I hear the sales were not brisk.
They weren't. The book came out after he dropped out of the presidential sweepstakes. If he had stayed in, it might have sold a few. But once he dropped out, he was non-news.
He was non-news, and it is interesting that at the age of 48, he's 5 years younger than the current governor. And he's 22 years younger than the guy who almost beat the current governor. And Bobby Jindal is an afterthought. Is there a second act for him in Louisiana?
You never write anyone off. I mean, you know, Edwin Edwards came back. He served four terms.
But he had a guy like Duke who enabled the comeback.
Well, yeah. But you never say never. I would not write him off.
Today, a very good column in The Advocate from Lanny Keller. There's only one governor at a time, and he's talking about how Republicans are lining up to knock out the current governor. And yeah. They didn't beat him at the ballot box, but now they're trying to make him an impotent governor. Is that possible with the powers that the governor of Louisiana has at his disposal to be basically emasculated?
Well, Jim, until John Bel Edwards got elected, the governor could pretty much dictate who the Speaker of the House was going to be, and that didn't happen when he took office. And the same with the president of the Senate. He didn't prevail like other governors had, and I think that alone has shown that they've neutered him to a certain extent. And I think people like Cameron Henry are going to keep the drumbeat up. They're going to do everything they can to diminish his power.
Lanny Keller writes about Stephen Wagusback of LABI taking aim at the governor, and he says Wagusback can advise lawmakers, but the governor has not gone away. His political obituary has not been written. He proposes the detailed state budget, controls state departments. He has a bully pulpit, as Teddy Roosevelt described, executive leadership, and Louisiana's governor has a line item veto that can delete spending items from the budget and much desired projects from the capital outlay budget if members do not play well with others. Interest groups like the influential oil and gas industry know that a governor's decisions are important to their businesses. Stability, not permanent right-wing revolution, may be more important to many more donors than just the ones calling this week on behalf of speaker candidates. So Edwin Edwards, as you noted, was a master at manipulating the legislature, but he had an almost all Democratic
legislature. That's correct. Even Hilario was Democrat at the time.
Well, yeah, and this is a totally different animal. And John Bel Edwards is dealing with a legislature that has 95 Republicans of the 144 members, and they're out to get him. Let's face it. This is war. We're going to talk about that. It's going to be interesting. We'll start with Mike in Villa Del Rey, and if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Reminder that at 10 o'clock, we'll go to the impeachment proceedings in the U.S. House of Representatives. Back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us with Tom Aswell, the exceptional reporter. You can read his work at Louisiana Voice. And he is here to talk about what's going on in our world. And a reminder that after this show, we'll go to the House Judiciary Committee. It abruptly postponed a historic vote late last night on articles of impeachment against President Trump. There's very little doubt that the panel will vote to impeach the president, so it'll go to the full House, where a vote will probably take place next week. 1998, Bill Clinton was impeached on two articles of impeachment by the U.S. House of Representatives on the 19th of December, and we're at the 13th of December. We could end up doing it on the anniversary or close to it 21 years later. 877-217-5757 for Tom Aswell, the pride of Ruston. Let's go to Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Mr. Aswell. The book, my favorite book of yours, is with Edwards in the Governor's Mansion. And with that said, we're having our Greater Baton Rouge Building Trades Party today. Hope to see you there. I'll hang up.
All right.
Well, Mike, I need to know where that party is. You hung up too quick, but I would love to be there. I didn't write that book. Former Angola prisoner who was a boxer and was a butler at the Edwards Governor's Mansion wrote the book. I edited it. I appreciate the compliment, but I can't take credit for that.
Well, Tom was with us a few months ago. You wrote a book this year about the rogue sheriffs in Louisiana.
I may need to write one about rogue judges after that city judge up in Shreveport.
Well, you read about all these things that are behind the scenes in Tom's Louisiana Voice, but it's Louisiana's Rogue Sheriffs, right?
Correct.
That's the book, and you've got, I understand you have another one coming.
Yes, I'm working on a follow-up called America's Rogue Sheriffs, and I'm also working on I've written the manuscript for a book about a murder in New Iberia that I feel like was not investigated properly by the sheriff's office.
Tom Aswell is one of those guys, as I used to say, when Mike Wallace would knock on your door, you didn't want to answer. Tom's, when he starts asking questions, he goes places others don't. Now, today, the Advocate also has an in-house editorial on the tickets that lawmakers get for the championship game.
Yep.
And it's a month from today, the championship game for college football, which LSU is probably going to be in. They are 13-point favorites over Oklahoma.
We hope. Yep.
And they'll be playing either Clemson or Ohio State. And on that day, John Bel Edwards will take the oath of office again as the second-term governor of Louisiana, joining John McKithen, Edwin Edwards, Mike Foster, Bobby Jindal as the only consecutive-term governors in our state's history. And he is foregoing a ball because he's anticipating being in New Orleans a few hours after the fact. But is it any big deal that lawmakers have access to these very good tickets? Does that go with the job?
They pay for the tickets. They pay the
face value.
The face value, yes.
I wonder how many of them then resell them on the markets, which they can also do.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I don't know. I don't know if anybody's ever looked into that. But I don't have that much of a problem with them buying, as long as they buy the tickets and pay the face value of them. I don't have any particular problem with it. The only downside is that they have access to these tickets that somebody else might not have.
Well, they are special people.
Correct. Well, they think they are.
And I'll say this in defense of lawmakers. The tickets, that's kind of a shaky thing as to how they get the access. But they do have a full-time job. That's a full-time job, being a state lawmaker, and the pay is not.
It's turned into a full-time job.
It's not exceptional. Yeah. It's not an exceptionally high-paid job. You can make a living doing that, but most of these people have successful endeavors that this time and effort takes away from the mothership.
It's a lot more than Texas legislators make.
And some states only meet every 2 years.
Right.
Louisiana, correct. We meet, as it turns out, several times each year, and that may continue with a Democrat in the governor's office. And Tom, a listener, notes that treasurer, Tom Schroeder, is scarfing up all the unclaimed property money, saying that that money should not be counted as far as counting the dollars for the state budget. So there's some activities going on that make it hard to project, and there's frustration already. We heard it yesterday from the Commissioner of Administration, Jay Darden. Where is this going? The Republicans obviously have the numbers in the legislature, but there is a Democrat in the governor's office, and as we know, we treat our governors quite special. He'll also have a ticket to the game.
I don't know if they are still listening to Grover Norquist or not, but it certainly looks like they are. And you talk about John Schroeder. You need to remember that he's also the one who introduced a bill to do away with civil service at one point, which is what launched Louisiana Voice. When he did that, that's when I started writing about him mainly, but he did try to abolish civil service.
Well, Joe Burrow tomorrow should win LSU's first Heisman since 1959. Billy
60
Cannon,
years to 60 the year.
60 years since Billy Cannon won. Well, 60 years from now, when you and I are long gone, will people still be talking about Joe Burrow the way we talk about Billy Cannon?
It would be nice. It's. We hope he doesn't get involved in counterfeiting money, but I think Joe Burrow will be the subject of conversation at LSU for a very long time.
He's had a magical season.
Yes, he has.
But as we know, it has to continue for two more games, or the legend will suddenly it'll stop.
Yeah, well,
he's got to win the national title too.
Yeah, the bloom will be off the rose, but I think they'll still remember him very well.
And for those who think that Billy Cannon won the Heisman in 1958, and I already had a person correcting me, that is wrong. He won the Heisman
59.
A year later. The LSU won the national title in 58. Cannon won the Heisman.
It was a punt return against Ole Miss.
89 yards, October 31st, 1959. He was like O.J. Simpson, who he won the national title his junior year at USC and then won the Heisman his senior year, and he also was the first player taken in the draft, as was Cannon. They both ran the 100 and 9-4, and O.J. went to an all-Asian high school with the exception of him in San Francisco, Galileo High School, so arguably they both played with the Chinese bandits.
What many people don't remember about Billy Cannon is he actually signed a pro contract before his final
he bowl did game. He did with Pete Rozelle, who was the general manager of the Los Angeles Rams.
That's correct.
He signed it under the goalpost of the Sugar Bowl, and it was voided by a judge in Louisiana who said that Rozelle was taking advantage of a dumb country boy. And I remember when the great Pete Finney, and I used to try to be close to him, the great sports writer for the Times-Picayune. I was in New Orleans.
Was it Times-Picayune or State Time?
Well, he started with State Time and finished with the Picayune. But I was in New Orleans at a Saints game, and I was talking with him. And Pete Rozelle, who was then commissioner, comes through the press box. And he's, of course, friends with Pete Finney. And he says, he goes, "Peter, how's that dumb country boy doing?" And this was right after Billy ran into his problems. But Billy Cannon, you talk about a guy who reinvented himself. By the time he died, everybody loved him, and for good reason. He went, as he said, right in the same chair you're sitting in. He said, "I was a thug." He went from that to a great human being.
Well, he did. He did volunteer work at Angola in dentistry, and I think that was very
well. It wasn't volunteer work.
I thought it was.
No, he was very, very well paid.
Oh, was he?
Oh,
okay.
Yes, he was.
Okay, I thought some of that was volunteer.
But he was doing work that few people would do.
That's correct.
That's not exactly a choice destination.
I want to interject this very quickly. I was talking to Mr. Glasper as he finished up here a while ago. The same year that his school played Catholic High in basketball, I was coaching an all-white baseball team in Ruston, and we kind of pioneered the integration issue in Ruston. We played an all-black baseball team that same year. And it was the same type
this
situation.
This was
69.
You were at which high school?
No, this was semi-pro baseball.
Okay, gotcha.
And there was a black team there in Ruston that wanted to play, and I said, "Good, let's play." And the sheriff's office turned down in force, of course. There was a lot of security. We had no problems whatsoever. Had a great game. My weakest hitter hit two triples, and we won the drove in all three runs for us, and we beat them 3-2. Great game.
Well, thank goodness that we're no longer segregating athletics. And it's hard to believe that LSU didn't have its first African-American football player on the varsity until 1972. And baseball, Major League Baseball, was not integrated until 1947 with Jackie Roosevelt Robinson. Thank you, Tom Aswell. Dan Clater, the soon-to-be ex-Louisiana senator, says he enjoys your work and just wanted to pass that along. He can say that now that he's about to be a private citizen.
I like Dan.
And the House Judiciary Committee has voted to impeach Donald Trump on two articles of impeachment, abuse of power, obstructing Congress. This historic vote only lasted a few minutes. So because of that, we will not be going to the Judiciary Committee. They've shut it down. They had a marathon 14-hour public discussion yesterday, but two articles of impeachment have been advanced by the House Judiciary Committee to the U.S. House of Representatives, where it is likely to pass, and then go to the Senate, where they will not vote to convict Donald John Trump, and then we'll have an election. And the election, by the way, is just 10 and one-half months away. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And stay tuned.